Welcome to the Soul Savvy Show here on Studio W The Buzz. Welcome, everyone. All right. I hope the crew's there. EB, Whitney, Q Lynn. All right. We'll be right back. Welcome to the Soul Savvy Show every Thursday now at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 6 o'clock Central and 7 on the East Coast. And want to welcome our host, EB, Q Lynn, and Whitney. Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey, Will, what's going on?
Oh, boy, having a few technical problems here, you know, with the songs that you sent me.
You and me both.
I don't know what's happening here. You know, this, other computer. I'm playing from my hard drive. This computer that I'm using right now, the other that I put up my alternate songs, this thing just won't play, but I'll get it fixed before the show is over. So, but anyway, just welcome to the show, and I'm sure it's going to be a great one. Let's see, remembering and a major, major tribute to the undisputed Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin.
Right. What was it? I came in late. What was you playing? Did you play Jump to It? Or you having technical difficulties?
No, he played Who's
Zooming
Who.
Right.
I was wanting to play. I'll do it next to you all to get to the thing.
Hey, go and do what you have to do. I've got several songs up here by Aretha anyway, so we can just skip to it and do whatever you want to do. But anyway, hey, let's carry on with the show. The show must go on.
Yes. Welcome to the Soul Savage Radio Show. We start every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I believe we are joined online by a special guest. Is a Dr. Selena Thompson. Are you on the line with us?
Yes, it's Selena. Selena's my sister.
Selena.
And quiet.
Selena. Sorry, we still hung up over Aretha. We all over the place, right? So sorry.
Oh, God, I know. It's terrible.
It shook our world up. But we'll get into that later in the show. Dr. Selena Thompson, she's also a phenomenal songwriter. She's written on Selena Johnson's Chapter 6 Couples Therapy, is one of my favorite albums of 2014.
That's not true. That's not true either. I was going to tell y'all that. I didn't write on that album.
Oh, you're credited? Really? What's the story behind you being credited on there?
I have no idea, because I was I got executive producer credit. The only song that I co-wrote with Selena is Slowly from chapter three. But somewhere online is floating around that I wrote on Couples Therapy, but maybe it's because I was executive producer.
Right. That was one of my questions I was going to ask. Did you co-write on that? Because I was like, the whole album is conceptually great. I just wanted to delve into a little bit of your background, if our listeners wasn't aware of all the things that you're do in the music industry. I know you're a manager, talent manager, you know, you hold so many titles. If you could inform our audience.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for having me. It is a sad day. I mean, I love Aretha Franklin. Come on. What I do is, probably for the last, I'm old. What year is this? 13 years, I've been Selena's manager, and now I pretty much call myself an agent. But I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a full-time professor at Berklee College here in New York City. I'm also a brand strategist, author, and I work, I coach a lot of people around their brand and helping them get their business together and off the ground, and as well as I work with a lot of authors. My clients are Selena Johnson, who's also my sister. My client is Dr. Ivan, health wellness guru, and Jonathan A. Mason, past president of Phi Beta Sigma, and he's an author speaker, and I'm working with him. I work with tons of other clients, and I have an entrepreneur network that is about 140 people. From the entertainment music side, I've written, my first book was called Rhythm Without Blues, The Dichotomy of a Music Genre. And it was about the industry, and it was about how, the reason why I called it Rhythm Without Blues is, I was, at that time, this was years ago, not that many years, but I was talking about how rhythm and blues, it's split, right? And so now we have Rhythm Without Blues. And before we had gotten this conversation of soul music and how white people are taking over soul. And I was back then talking about how rhythm R&B is not really like it used to be. And so I wrote that book. I'm actually republished it. So I'm going to probably be speaking and going out and talking about that some more. But I also consult with people, and as a trainer, as a master trainer, I help people transform their brands The music stuff is fun. You know, I love working on album projects. Selena, I've probably been there through all of her projects, executive produced on some. I only really co-wrote on one song. And she's right now in Nashville. She's doing the Black Music Honors. They're filming. And she's doing a tribute to Faith. They're honoring Faith Evans, so she's in that tribute. It's going to air on TV One, I think, next month. But now they're, you know, they asked her to do the Aretha Franklin tribute. I believe they're trying to work that out. So
the one coming up to Madison Square Garden in November?
No, they are filming right now in Nashville called the Black Music Honors. And Selena was, she went there today to do a Faith Evans tribute. They're honoring Faith Evans, Stephanie Mills. They're honoring BB and CeCe Wanning, Houdini, Bobby Brown. And the Queen of Soul just so happened to die today. So it shook everything up. So I believe they're going to try to put together a tribute. And that's tonight. Right now, tonight. So So I love music. I'm passionate about it. Another passion of mine is TV. So I'm getting into the TV side of things, production side of things. Tons of projects on my plate. You know, Selena now is a talk show host on Sister Circle, which is Monday through Friday on TV One. So I was instrumental in getting her that. And so I love the TV world a little bit more than the music world, because the music industry is full of, I don't know if we can curse on your show, but.
We can't. We have limited. We've been given.
I'm not going to curse.
Words. So you can use them. I have four for myself, so you can use them.
The music industry is full of poo-poo. So, it's rough right now. So, you know, it's a different world right now with streaming. So I do a lot of things. People can go to drselecia.com. That's drselecia.com. And they can Google me and find me. But, you know, I don't want to take up too much time going over my resume, you know. So I'm passionate about a lot of things. You know, I'm on summer break. I am a full-time professor. You know, I teach business, management, leadership. Teach music business. You know, my background was years ago, was in the corporate world. So, you know, I have 3 degrees, an economics degree, an MBA, and a doctorate degree. And I just merge all the worlds together, music, entertainment, entrepreneurship, teaching. I don't really have a life, so I just, you know, I just.
Your life is music. Music, right.
I don't have a life. But,
right. I just had a few questions, and then my two calls, Evie and Whitney, have some for you as well. We're not going to hold you too long in your busy schedule. But this one question you were talking about in terms of your book. You're talking about, I say non-black artists that do soul music. I wrote an article about that a couple years ago. You and your sister, I think, shared it, or you retweeted it on Twitter. And I was basically saying that artists like Selena, I said, instead of being mad at the sales of non-black artists like Adele, like support Selena Johnson's, and I was more so of saying, making a statement that TV networks, you know, like TV One, BT, need to do a better job of promoting artists when they have award shows instead of just tributes, like promote their actual albums, you know, just like that. But I get the game. You know, they try to, same thing as Grammys, in terms of having the most famous mainstream artists on there to bring in the ratings. I get it, but I'm just saying, in terms of the getting R&B back to mainstream, I think you did an Insta story a while back, and you were talking about the 3 M's in terms of being successful, that artists should have, or musicians should have. I know the 3 M's, but if you could explain to the audience the 3 M's to be successful in the music industry.
Okay, well, first of all, I want to piggyback off this soul conversation real quick, because...
We're
going to come back, because I wrote an article, I kind of went in. Okay, well, we're going to get back
into it. You're getting way into it, so you're doing well.
Okay, so I'll give you the 3 M's first, but make sure we get back to this soul thing.
Yes, we will.
The 3 M's, I believe I was on a live stream of Selena's, and she was recording me, and we were acting crazy, but... The three M's were merchandise, I said, have your movement, and then I said, what was the other one? It was, I'm sorry, what did you say?
Money, I believe.
Right. So it was money. It was to make money from various income streams, right? So the first M, I was saying that, you know, artists sometimes get stuck into, well, I'm just going to go in the studio, record an album, put the CD out, and I'm going to sell a zillion copies. And that's not where we are anymore, right? So that first M is have various ways of making money. The second M, I talk about, and I always try to teach artists that merchandise is very, very key. And not just like, oh, I'm selling t-shirts, but, you know, things that you're passionate about. So if you are a rap artist, but you love, skateboards, maybe you can get your own skateboard line, right? So think outside the box from a merchandise standpoint. You can sell anything because we have the internet now. You can have a website. And then that last three was your movement. So I always tell artists and entrepreneurs that you have to have a platform. You can no longer just afford to be cookie cutter. You know, even Quavo and the Migos and OT Genesis have platforms, right? They have things they're passionate about from a philanthropic standpoint, charitable standpoint. You have to have a platform, and you can make money that way. You can go out and speak. You know, we're no longer, no, not every rap artist or artist can go think, but you can be involved in charitable things. You can, you know, you can, you should have a platform. You should have a movement. You should have something that, you know, you're not going to be this hot rapper, Cardi B, forever, right? So she's going to be 50 at some point, you know, so she has to start creating a brand now that is centered around a platform and a movement. And I don't think a lot of artists think about it, especially when they're young in their 20s and 30s. They think they're hot and they're going to be that way forever. But someone who's been very brilliant doing that is Alicia Keys, Beyonce, Erykah Badu, and you see it tied to, and even Selena. You know, Selena's just not one-dimensional music. You know, it's the talk show. She's passionate about, you know, causes around autism and health and wellness. And so you don't want to wait too long to start developing your movement. And that is your platform. And I mean, I can go all day on this, but I just see sometimes, you know, artists are just like, I'm trying to make music. I'm trying to just be turning up in the studio. I mean, you look at J. Cole, beautiful example. I love him. He's, not only does he have the three M's down, but he's so evolved at such a young age that this guy is going to be touring for the next 20, 30 years, right? You look at Jay-Z, he set himself up as well. I look at J. Cole as he's going to be like a Jay-Z, right? Being able to tour and have that, have a platform well beyond the hot singles era, because Jay-Z and them don't care about having a hot single. I mean, they end up having singles and hot music or whatever. But their platform and their movement is so large that it's outside of what they originally started as, which were, you know, recording artists. You know, so I just try to get people thinking a little bit differently. Like, not just music and making money, but it should be about, you know, there's another component to that, too, is, you know, intellectual property and, you know, owning your masters and copyrights and having trademarks and trademarking things and just having ownership, because ultimately, if you're going to be in this world and have a family, I mean, you're probably going to want to start, you know, creating generational wealth and things to pass down. So I know that's like, oh, anybody think about generational wealth? But that's what you get into the music industry, you don't get a 401k plan. Like, they don't be like, here's your IRA. They don't tell you about saving. They don't tell you about getting a will, a trust. And you have so many artists that are go broke or just you know, can't make money beyond a certain point. So that's my little soapbox. Shit, I could go on and on about that. And that's for any entrepreneur, really.
Yes, specifically, for musicians as well. You know, them, I tell them all the time, ensuring your instrument and doing other things besides backing or touring. Touring is the main, I believe, the main income for musicians, but other, you know, in terms of sponsoring, advertisement with drum companies or any kind of instrument company like Vic Firth and stuff like that, you know, musicians have other, you know, multiple streams of income with that as well in terms of teaching, doing seminars and conventions, teaching, you know, giving lessons and stuff like that is other, you know, to add on what you're saying. But I only have a couple of questions, and pertaining to getting back to the non-black artists, doing R&B soul music. When I wrote it, I was trying to figure out, I was in the process, it was mostly, motivated by what I heard Tyrese and K. Michelle said about if a Robin Thicke did, the song he did for Black Roses, I forgot the name of it, the one on Shame. If he did Shame, it would have been number one on the chart. And I beg to differ because besides Lost Without You, that was his first number one R&B, but, when he did the song with Pharrell, Blurred Lines, that was his first number one pocket. And so he was technically still, and then after, he made like two albums after that nobody knew about, and it didn't do as well. So I think, in pertaining to the article, I was trying to highlight that when did soul music, in terms of the mainstream, when did it stop appearing? And I researched it, and it was around 2003, 2004. And if you look at the Billboard charts during that time period from like 2003 till about 2007, they basically had merged R&B and hip-hop records. So you had Fat Joe Records featuring Ashanti. It was like, you know, those kind of records that had a hip-hop featuring an R&B artist. Those were the most of it. And then you had like artists in there like Rahsaan Patterson and your sister Selena Johnson had albums. You know, it was just particular like Lettucey, Jasmine Sullivan. And then it was around that time Amy Winehouse and Jasmine Sullivan kind of popped off at the same time, around 07, 08, with Back to Black, and then her debut album, Jasmine's debut album. That was when it started reemerging in sort of that field. And so basically what I was trying to highlight in there is that you can't get mad at Adele or Robin Thicke or non-black artists if you're not supporting R&B artists that have been making this for years. And I feel like from 2011, the albums nominated like Kelly Price, Marsha Ambrosia, and then just recently PJ Morton. I feel like he got cheated this year because I feel like he had the most solid R&B album, but we already know who it went to because he swept the Grammy. And so my thing was, I feel like it's on the listeners and the consumers of the music, and also the way it's promoted. I don't think it's the same thing. And then if you look at how R&B music was promoted, it was put on the pop charts as well. But now it's like limited to urban AC radio or adult contemporary. Those are the names now. So basically, like I don't disagree at all that when white artists do it, they want to whitewash soul music. And I get that. But I'm saying that it's up to the consumer as well. And I feel like they lack musical history. So what is your thoughts pertaining to in terms of getting R&B back to mainstream? Like, what is it going to take to get those?
Well, you know, I mean, it's too many. It's like, it's not as easy and simple as people think. You know, you literally have to see the inner workings of a record label for, you know, and I've seen it because Selena was signed to Jive Records, which was, you know, that was under Zomba, which was under Sony, and that was in 1998. And they signed her, knowing good and well, and she's like 20-something and 21, what they found that was not like a typical poppy artist. So you can, you know, the consumer does play a very big role in this. However, the foundation has already been laid because labels looked at that time, and they've always looked at, now I'm not going to say at that time, they look at R&B as a niche genre, right? So they don't years ago, they didn't consider it a cash cow, right? So they call the cash cows the country, the pop, rock, but now it's rap. So when you look at it as a niche genre, you look at it as a write-off, you look at, and you're not giving it the full weight behind it, because the artists typically, as R&B artists, are typically black artists, there's an element of, hello, racism, okay? So you want the sound, you feel obligated because you got the genre on your label, but you're not giving it full marketing dollars, right? So if Selena was signed to a label and Britney Spears was signed to that same label, NSYNC was on that same label, Backstreet Boys was on that same label, R. Kelly, you had Joe, I'm just thinking about everybody at that time. Now, at that time, and then later Alicia Keys went through Aerosmith, but, so at that time, you got all these people, nobody is, the NSYNC and Britney, they're bubbling up, and I remember going to Saturday Night Live with, Britney Spears was backstage, she wasn't even as big as she was, and she was just there supporting Justin. We were just all there, Selena was there, as like label mates supporting each other. And you can see where the money was going. Like, you can see where the money is going. So that's one component to it. Not to tell too many secrets, but these people are real racist. So you can see where the money was going. It's like, you can look at a Selena Johnson budget. You can look at any R&B artist budget at that time, late 90s, early 2000s, some of the era that you're saying. And it's like, okay, why are they getting all this money to promote it? Because if you put money in anything, people will hear it. Of course, you play Selena's song 50 million times on the radio. You dump radio money into it. They're going to love it, right? So you have that working. And it's just so funny how... same kind of voice, Adele, the soulful, scratchy voice, the Amy Winehouses, the people, with the same kind of scratchy, the sound I'm talking about. It can come out and sell 10 trillion zillion. So it's clearly an issue of race, and it's an issue of putting money where they think it's more advantageous. Now, we can look at Beyonce. You can look at tons of artists. And I hate to get into this whole colorism thing, but Matthew Knowles said it. Beyonce is lighter skin. So give those Beyonce songs to Kelly Rowland or to Jill Scott or to Fantasia. Would they be the same impact? Okay. Now, we can debate that all day. So there's some truth to a lot of this. The money was just not there. And then you brought up another point, the merging of hip-hop and R&B. So doing that, to me, is stupid because they're two different genres, two different experiences. It was totally stupid. But now you have rap music. Hip-hop is the largest genre in the U.S. So that's no stopping. And they thought that was a fluke. They didn't even think rap and hip-hop was going to last. But now...
exactly.
It is lasting. But it's interesting if you watch rap, right? So rap is pop music. You can get rap to cross over easy. Very easy. You can see, I'm just asking the listeners to see what can cross over easy, right? Things that are dumbed down. Things that are very simple. It's very hard to cross a Fantasia over to pop. Unless she has a very simple record, it's so crazy that you're almost like you have to be dumbed down to cross over. And there's a dumbing down in our society. So J. Cole is not a huge pop artist, but his following is outrageous. Beyonce is technically an R&B artist. Like, she's an R&B artist, but because she has mainstream popular songs, pop music, she classifies as both. So, I do think the consumer has some, because now we're in an internet world. So if you like Selena, if you like Fantasia, if you love Latticee and Lila James, you know where to find them, and you know where to find their music. So don't be so lazy. Don't wait for that ad to pop up in your face or for the song to be on the radio, right? So the consumer now has a lot of blame, but I think it's already been set in stone, you know, because of labels. So I do talk about that in this article I wrote called The New Face of Soul. And I said the consumer has a big, you know, now in this digital age, there's no excuse. But the labels kind of set that up. I think R&B artists play a role in this too, because they're so, the culture is so cutthroat. It's like, look at a tour. Why can't an R&B tour survive? I mean, you see what's happening with Tayana and Jeremiah. Like, name it. Besides Latticee, because Latticee is an amazing human being, it's very difficult for R&B tours, or, you know, Latticee is an amazing human being. So she had Raheem and Lila James. She did, it was Maxwell, Latticee, and Lila. And they all have the same management, so that's why that worked. Now sure. Latticee went out with Tweet and, I think, Tweet and somebody else. Want to say Lila or somebody? Tweet and somebody else. So that's a one-off. But when TGT tried to go out, it was all kind of drama. So I blame artists, too. I blame artist managers, because if we would just band together, if we would just come together, we can sell big R&B tours. Why don't they exist? Why, you know, it's even with R. Kelly, when he was going out, like, to get on his tour is so political, and then he's so crazy, and there's like, you got to be a woman, and, you know, because he a freaky deek. And it's just, why isn't somebody like R. Kelly or some large R&B artist person saying, you know, Robert has an ego, so he's not about to put no man that's going to sing better. But if he was a real, you know, if there was a real tour, he could be like, hey, let me put Joe on, Selena, and Raheem. They were all, and amen. Anthony Hamilton. They were all on the same label. They were all on the right. same label. It should have been R. Kelly, Joe, Raheem Devon, Selena, and Anthony Hamilton on a tour. Like, why couldn't that? That would be huge. They would do massive theaters and stadiums. But again, I blame the artist. So this is a topic that I will go in on, because it's, I just sit back and watch it because I'm in the inner workings, and I've tried to get tours together with Selena and the R&B Divas and all these other people, and nobody wants to cooperate. So is it ego? Is it management? I don't know. You know, it's just fascinating. So that's one thing. But then you do have these artists, white artists, that come in, take the sound, they study the music. They lack soul, but they try to sing soul music. And you get the Sam Smiths, you get the Adeles, you get these people trying to mimic soul and the sound, which is very hard to do, because soul music, it really does come from my dad, Phil Johnson, soul singer from, you know, back in the day. He says it, you know, soul singing literally comes from the soul. It comes from hurt and pain. It comes from our ancestors. So they can steal the sound all they want, but they lack the ability to really deliver it. Like, you can put Adele up against a Fantasia, and I don't care how bad Adele stand there on stage and just sing. She got a great voice, but put Fantasia next to her. That's a soul singer. You're going to feel it. You're going to cry. Now, you're going to be like, man, Adele blowing. You're going to be like, yeah, clap it up for her, maybe even scream. But when Fantasia sings and Latticee, that's when you know it's soul, because they evoke emotion. So a lot of these white soul singers, they're fraudulent, right? They're not real soul singers, but they study the soul sound. And I got to give it up to, you know, Justin Timberlake. I love him because he grew up in the South. So, again, some of these people studied our music, and you can't hate on them. That's what they like. You know, they study the riffs and the runs. But I just don't like calling white artists soul singers, because they don't, to be an authentic soul singer, you got to be able to perform. It comes from, there's a gospel to it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I could be on this all day. These people, Amy Winehouse was kind of close, But the reason, the reason why Amy was close is because the girl battled a lot of issues, drugs and all that other stuff.
Right.
So again, she was tapping into pain, and I think she came close, to a certain degree, but there's still, you know, she lacked a certain ability on stage, especially you high, you sitting up there high looking crazy. So you can't, you can't be just, you know.
Hot takes from Dr. Felicia.
Don't, I can go on and on. Like, don't do a Layla Hathaway show.
I love it.
Every Sunshine show. You want to talk about some soul singers. Now, Beyonce is a great singer. She's an R&B singer. She's not a soul.
Please,
you know, that's fine. You know, she doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. Now, she can run with, you know, she got her little runs, but she got about two, mm-hmm. three chords in it. She ain't really doing all of that. However, the girl can make you feel something, but she's not a soul singer. You know what I'm saying? Because, just because of her tone, you know. But a Jasmine Sullivan, that's a soul singer, you know. And it's okay, you know. You can be an R&B singer and be blowing. I love her. I love her.
She's amazing.
But not everybody can sing soul. Like Demetria McKinney, you know, she can't sing soul, but she's a great singer. You know, there's some great singers. Great singers, but not all of them are really a soul singer. Which is okay. Which is, you know.
Right.
It's not their fault that those are their vocal cords. So.
I,
you know.
Well, you're talking right. You're exactly right. And my last question before I get into my two co-hosts. What you just said, it is on the record labels as well, but what I was thinking about when you said that was, okay, when we look back, like late 80s, early 90s, and we look at the people that were creating the black music, like a Kashif, like a Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, like Babyface in L.A., though they were in position, you know what I mean, to have executives, you know, and L.A. Reid, when they made LaFace Records, they were putting out black music. And then also with Andre Harrell with Uptown Records, you know, you go from Heavy D to Mary J. Blige, you know, so on and so forth. And so when he left to go to Motown, he left Uptown, went to Motown, and then L.A. Babyface, they did their own thing separately. Then L.A. went to Arista for a time. And then, you know, so my thing is, what about the black executives? Do you think the lacking of them to, you know, have talent there, like soul artists, do you think they fell into the system? Like, I feel like Berry Gordy and Russell Simmons, in terms of hip-hop, in terms of going over to trying to make pop records and making black artists make that be appealing to Caucasian listeners. Do you think that did it? And then also, is it just that lack of black executives to push soul music in the record label? Do you think that's a key core to it as well?
Yeah, the lack of black executives. I mean, there were a sprinkle of black A&Rs, black executives.
The lack of musical
history
as well.
But I think the people that were there did their best. You know, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, they were pumping out real, like, R&B poppy stuff, right? They were pumping out some good music, and they had good runs, right? And then you had Diddy, but he was on the more so hip-hop style, so you had Mary J. Blige be the queen of hip-hop soul. So there was only sprinkle, the sprinkle of black artists that have really reached mainstream success. And that was what I actually touched on in my book, because when I wrote my book, it was based off of my research I did for my doctorate degree. I wrote my dissertation on the role of record labels in helping rhythm and blues artists achieve mainstream success. I did an in-depth study on this. And so what I found, I sat down, I talked to artist managers and record label executives, right? And some of them on the record, some of them not on the record. And a lot of it was just lack of funding, lack of money, like you said, lack of history. You had a few people that understood it, like Clive Davis. He wasn't even black, and he understood, you know. Like, you had But again, I do think it goes back to black people, African American artists or minorities and, you know, even women in key roles, you know, but again, if you think about that, so they weren't in key roles, so but again, record labels are corporations, they're businesses. So if they go in thinking I gotta make money and I need to make quick money, I don't have time to be dumping all this money in urban AC and R&B. Because they typically are thinking, oh, black folks, they're not going to buy music, which we do. If you look, we will buy the music, and we'll go to a concert. Now, we love a good concert. We're going to spend money. We're going to buy the outfit for the concert. We're going to get our hair done for the concert, and we're going to get to the concert and buy food and drinks. So just underestimating their consumer base. So they're a corporation, and they're thinking, okay, I need to make money. I need to make money fast. I need to be profitable, and I can make it with this, right? And it used to be rock bands, pop music, and that slowly died down, and they saw rap music being easy, quick, simple. Rap artists aren't going out with bands. They don't need glam. They don't need all this extra expenses. I'm just sending them out in a DJ. You know, that they're using tracks now, right? So, you know, artists sometimes would bring in musicians and all this stuff in the studio. And so it was very simple. It was very easy. It's quick, fast, and simple. It's the dumbing down of our society is what I like to call it. But it's a corporation. So at the end of the day, their goal is to make money. So when you don't have executives that are people of color in key roles, they're not going to look out for the best interest of the soul music consumer base. Now, on the flip side to that, because there's always a flip side, my thing is this. If you go down to suburban somewhere in Kansas City, and because Selena has white fans. She's got Asian fans. Okay. She's got fans all over the world.
Right.
So if you go somewhere to the suburbs in Kansas City or in any of North Dakota, and you put money in radio, and you let's say you just play a, you know, put money in a Selena Johnson song, and you play it over and over again, Little Miss Molly, Barbecue Becky may end up liking it because good music is good music. So that's my thing. It's like, you're assuming that white people won't buy it or other colors or other nationalities won't buy it, but that's an assumption from it's an uneducated assumption because music is music. People love music. People love Beyonce. You know, one of Selena's biggest fans came onto the show when we were just in New York. You're all white man! I was like, what? And then when we go to Europe, when she's got a number one fan, he's Northern Ireland, he's Irish, right? Her biggest fan, he's been with us for years, now he's like friend and family, but he's a white guy. He actually helped me co-write the article, it's my new face of soul, his name is Glenn. Shout out to Glenn. But and he just likes good music. So it's really ignorant for labels to think, oh, I just got to push this to the black market or to black consumers, when really good music is good music. Little Miss Becky might like a Latitude record, which she probably does. You know what I'm saying? So it's just all messed up. It's just ridiculous.
Okay,
I can go on and on. Cause, you know.
Right.
I love it. Wow. So, I mean, you're spitting some knowledge on this interview today. My mind is racing because it's a lot going on, and everything you're saying is hitting on so many topics that I want to discuss. Now, I was actually at the show in New York at the City Winery, and I want to say, yeah, I have to say this, and I hate saying it when we have, esteemed women like yourself on, but I have to say it. I think you, Selena, and Celeste are three of the most beautiful sisters I have ever seen in my life.
Okay,
like, I remember.
No, you can say it. Why you don't want to say it? Why you don't want to say
I think the first time I encountered Selena was because I'm a fan of your father's. She was on a song of his called Half a Love.
And you didn't want that.
Oh no. I've been a fan since then, and I saw Selena, and I was already like, oh, she's gorgeous. But I didn't see you and Celeste till later, maybe like around 2000, 2002, somewhere in there. And I was just like, wow, like jeans just popping in every which way.
Oh God.
I just, I had to see that first, but so going back to, a little bit of what you were discussing earlier, first of all, I want you to, call, text, smoke signal Selena and tell her if they're having her do an Aretha tribute, she needs to sing a song by Aretha called Lean On Me that I've listened to so many times, and but today it was like one of those songs I had on repeat, and I could only think of two people who could do it, and it was Ledisi or Selena Johnson. There's like this key change and this note, and nobody else could do it and do it right. So tell her that. So tell the executive
what
she's
doing tonight. I think she's going to do Chain of Fools, you know, because she did that on her album.
Okay, well, you know what?
I'm thinking. But I'm sure there's going to be tons of tributes.
Yeah. No, I that's the one she needs to do because it's amazing. So I want to ask you this question because it's been a discussion going on, and I've seen the word talking about the state of R&B today and the talent that's out now, the newer talent. Everybody says it's because they don't grow up in the church or they're unchurched. In my opinion, that's not exactly it. I mean, that has a little bit to do with it. But I'm from the school of thought where at one point in time, R&B was heavily influenced by gospel music. Singers like Aretha, singers like Patti, singers like Gladys, they all had these church backgrounds, and they brought that element to rhythm and blues. And I think somewhere around the late 90s, early 2000s, it shifted where hip-hop was now the dominant art form in the black community, at least. So everything now is more influenced by hip-hop. How do you feel about that argument? You know, singers, they don't sound the same because they don't come from the church.
I disagree. Singers don't sound the same because they're signing people to these labels that sound like goats. So when you sign a goat, you gonna get a goat singing. Okay. Now, everybody knows I call people that can't sing goats, and I'm okay with it. Don't at me, and I can back it up. Okay. So if you're gonna, okay, I'm not afraid. Okay. I hang around way too many singers. Like, I've been in a room with people like Patti LaBelle, so I can't allow it.
Absolutely.
So the labels are signing these people. We can go right down to the church right now, and you got a Leandra, you know, somewhere there's a Tasha Cobb somewhere. Okay, there's a Lila James somewhere. So they're signing what they think is easy, simple, stripped down voices, not to it. They think that sells, you know, and there's a format to it. And, you know, I get it because they feel like, there's a format to a song. And, you know, they want the verse, hook, bridge, but no, whatever. You know, and then there's also, you know, we got to be simple here, and you don't give them too much on the record, because then you can't duplicate it in the live show. So there's all these different rules and unwritten rules to creating a song. And so, and this kind of voice is more pleasing to the ear. Like, literally, you know, you don't want to get too churchy. It's the dumbing down of our society. So when you're signing people, and I'm not saying you gotta be blowing every song.
Right.
You know, I like my little dumb songs. Like, okay, I like my little red bottom shoe songs and my little booed up. But look at the hit right now. Mm-hmm. Ella May. So, you know she ain't really singing and she ain't talking about nothing. Let's just say it. It's cool. It's cool. Because you gotta have your little booed up songs. She, you know, and they say that's what the millennials want to hear, right? 12 to 24. So they literally program our 12 to 24 ears, right, to say you need simple stuff, not to, they're not trying to hear a legacy. When, again, Selena's got fans that are 16, 17, 18. But it's the dumbing down of our society. It's corporatization of music. It is them telling us what we want to hear. So you're signing people that sound like goats. You're signing people that really can't sing. And then you're blaming it on the artist. No, you sign these people. So I don't kind of agree with that. K. Michelle has had great success. Keisha Cole. Are they soul singers? No. Okay. You listen to them live. You may or may not have a bad time. Let's just keep it real. Okay. You know, but they do evoke motion. They do tap into that emotion of the a black woman, right? Because they're telling stories. That's another thing, you know, you gotta be able to tell a story. So they're Keisha Cole, K. Michelle, these artists have songs that they're telling stories, you know, and they're tapping into a consumer. So I'm not saying everybody has to be singing like Fantasia and Selena. That's just not realistic. We do need diversity in sound.
Right.
But these are the people getting signed. You know, you think about Brandy. Brandy to me is in my top 10 on vocal. She just, people really sleep on her like they really not, they don't really know that Brandy Cole. Like, Brandy Cole, her and Monica, like, beast. But they were in a different time frame. They were in a different world where they had pop music, they had pop hits, they had R&B, they can merge with hip-hop. But really, Brandy and Monica can really sing. Like, they really can sing. So, again, they got signed, but it's just the kind of records they were given. Whitney Houston, remember when she came out, she was given really cookie-cutter stuff. Mm-hmm. But it was like award shows and live shows, that's when you knew she was blowing. But even with Whitney, like, you could tell on I Want to Dance with Somebody that she had them pipes. Like, you, like Clive wasn't really playing games. So they're not signing a lot of Whitneys today. Even Lauryn Hill, when Lauryn Hill got signed and the Fugees and that whole, like, Lauryn can sing and she can rap, who are they signing mm-hmm. like that? You got Nicki Minaj thinking she a singer and Cardi B and them. Now you got rappers thinking they should sing their own hook, which something
right.
is totally despicable.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm.
Selena just texted me. She said she's singing Natural Woman. So I thought I'd just text. Because I texted.
Oh, well, okay. You know what?
She's doing Natural Woman.
Okay. I can hear it. So I'm pleased.
So, you know, it's just who they're signing, you know, Ken Michelle, the Ella Mays. I love her because I think her has a great tone. I love her stories. I love her delivery. And she can, I like her voice. I like her voice, just like I like Tweet. But what people don't know about Tweet, Tweet was very laid back on records. Tweet can blow. Tweet has soul. People don't really know.
I've seen Tweet live, and it's crazy what she can do with her voice.
No, she's bananas. But again, you wouldn't know that. You wouldn't know that. It's quite fascinating. So it's just who they're signing. I mean, you got her. Like, who's R&B right now? Young, out, fresh. Jasmine Sullivan, people should have been dying over. She's so cold. Like, you could tell the people that studied a Kim Burrell and a Faith Evans, and that's Jasmine mm-hmm. Sullivan.
Yeah, so, Jasmine is one.
But who are they saying?
You brought up
Ella May.
Ella May. I mean, that brings you to another point. Earlier, you brought up J. Cole and what he's doing. He actually has an artist. Her name is Ari Lennox. I fell in love with her first project, and I think that she's it in terms of the next generation, but but the labels aren't going after her. She's not blowing up. I remember even last year at Essence Fest, she shared the stage with Chaka Khan, Jasmine Sullivan, Layla Hathaway, Mary J. Blige, and it was one more, I can't remember. They're sharing a stage, and she held her own with these legends. But like you said, the labels are not going after the talent. They're going after who they think will sell the most. Who, I mean, R&B music basically at this point is a commodity. I mean, it's profitable for the labels. I don't even like to call it R&B in most instances because now it's become this weird, I call it hip hop and R&B. Like they don't even give R&B its own lane anymore. You know, if you notice, like the award show, it's hip hop and R&B. It started out race music and then it moved to black music. And then once hip hop came, it's like, oh, we lump them all together. So a lot of singers, and Selena being one of them, don't get the recognition they deserve. And I think there are singers like, you mentioned Brandy earlier, I'll say Music Soul Child. I think they feel that pressure, Monica, to keep up with the industry. So the result of that is the music that we get from them is subpar.
You just hit on a real good point.
They're not giving it. So what do you think it'll take for that to change?
Well, you just hit on a very key point. We're slowly being diminished from mainstream. And it's either your pop, your rap, or you're this little bitty R&B niche. Right? So, you see it at the Grammys. The R&B awards are like at 2 o'clock. They're not even televised.
Right. And then
they throw like Rihanna in there and rappers. It's like, how you gonna, like, it's crazy. Sometimes when I see the Grammy list, I'm just like, come on now. How are you putting these people in this category? So, they're slowly diminishing the art. It's actually a shame. You know, it's actually a shame. It's going to take the consumer. It's going to take artists coming together. It's just, I think hip hop is so heavy right now. It's tough. I think you'll have those one or two booed up, you know. I liked how Lela James had the, that one record. What was that big record? It was kind of crossover.
Fall for You.
Right, so that became like a wedding record, and you may get a couple of those. You know, it's tough. But here's the thing: the internet, digital streaming, that's where we are. So now there's freedom. You could actually just create your own music, and you could put it out there. You can push and create a digital streaming campaign, which is what we're getting ready to do with Selena's next album that she's working on with Toxic Productions. And you just have to go find your consumer. And you have to, the thing is you can't get caught up in, I'm still trying to get awards. It's tough. You know, they don't respect the genre. So I guess it takes people like you guys, these kind of shows, independent artists. Most R&B artists right now are independent, which is good, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Right, yeah.
And look, like 10 years ago, I trademarked India is a New Major because I saw it coming. Nobody was talking about it. I saw it coming. When I saw E1, I'm like, wait a minute, E1 is killing out here. Before, I mean, it was Koch Records. And so I was like, India is a New Major. And so we got an independent deal in like 2008. Into 2007, and we start putting out independent projects, but it's tough. Like right now, what I tell like artists, R&B artists or independent artists, I'm not worried about hip hop because you could get one little stupid song and take off and tour and like fill up stadiums. It's ridiculous. But for R&B artists, you gotta focus on being an entrepreneur. Focusing on them three M's, you gotta focus on being independent and making money outside of just records. So you gotta build your, you know, tour, concert base, you gotta do other things, get into TV, get into film, you gotta act, you gotta start businesses, you know, Coco, SWV, you know, her, when she's divorced now, but when she was married, her and her husband, they opened up juice bars. Like, that's how you gotta be. Like, you gotta hustle. You can't be sit, because you, they don't respect the genre. And they love the genre, you know. They wanna, they like the music, they like the sound, but for white people, white artists, they can take it and make it a huge pop hit. That Hello, had Selena done Hello, Letticy, Fantasia, you think it would have got that mainstream success? Come on now. Come on now. Hello is so basic. Hello? Come on. What are we talking about? I mean, what are we talking about?
I think it was the whole anticipation. I think that's another that sells, like, the reason why Beyonce, Taylor Swift, those mainstream acts can do that, because they're anticipated. And then the same with D'Angelo's Black Messiah. Like, everybody was talking about that on the internet. It quickly won a Grammy the next year, but everybody's anticipating the D'Angelo album because it's been like 15 years since he dropped the solo project. That was his third album. But it just
But D'Angelo did not, D'Angelo, here's the thing, D'Angelo did not sell Adele numbers. Okay.
I know, but,
Adele came out.
I'm gonna.
Again, because, he came out of hiatus. However, that's still not what he should have been selling. You got Barry Manilow selling that. He ain't
even. I mean, I get it.
I'm not necessarily on the numbers. I'm just saying the anticipation. Because some of these mainstream artists are not doing that. It's just the, like this Nicki Minaj album, like, yes, anticipate people are, her fans are anticipating it, but the numbers might not translate. I'm just saying on the internet, it's the perception that because such and such artist does this well, that it's going to turn over the numbers of their social media followers. Translate that, but that's not the case. No problem is what I was saying.
No, that's but all, it, that's all right, saying. But yeah, but in the case of Adele, I'm saying give records to Letticy, Fantasia, Selena, Faith Evans, whatever. Not
and
gonna be the
sell.
Same, and they gonna body.
Sell.
They're gonna body rolling in the deep. That's like, I mean, come on, that's what I'm
I
saying.
Said that.
So
I actually
it's
said
just
that
ridiculous.
Now.
You're right.
Selena's song, I touched my hair. I cut my hair. I said, had that been an Amy Winehouse and Adele, it would have sold millions of records. Millions, because it would have been something that people could relate to. But because it was something that someone like Selena did, it didn't reach the people like those records do. It didn't reach, like, you know, the major labels and the millions of people, but that's, it's almost like, even in life, you know, as black folk, we have to work twice as hard to get half as far in any field, and especially in music, we, and I hate to make it racial, but, I mean, it is racial, it's the truth. Black artists have to work twice as hard, they have to release phenomenal music just to compete with the mediocre music of our non-melanated counterparts. Like, it's something that frustrates me. It frustrates me because, and I'm an Amy Winehouse fan through and through, and partly because of, like you touched on earlier, she tapped into her real life experiences, her real pain, and I hear that in her music. But the way she blew up is unlike anything, and it's always, if you notice, it's always the artists from the UK that do that. And it's
let's do it. Okay.
In my mind, it's they first they appreciate, and they
that's number one,
the music that is largely ignored here in the U.S.
That's number two.
And then there's that whole, I think, since the British invasion of the 60s, when the Beatles came over, there's been that whole, let's go overseas and get the talent that we're lacking here. But what they don't realize is the talent from over there is just taking from over here. And that frustrates
me. That's number three. Okay.
What's number four? What's number four, Doctor?
Okay. You go, if you go over to London, Selena's done shows over there. Amsterdam. Oh, yeah. All white audience.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She got a lot of black fans. Now, I'm not going to say all white. But you look out, you see a lot of white people. They just like good music. They love it. That's why they mimic it. They're not hiding it. They're not hiding it, right? So this is what they love. They loved the James Browns. They loved all of that stuff. They love that. They follow our culture now, just in general. So it's interesting because you could go over there and white people, Europeans, really appreciate real singing. Avery Sunshine goes over there and kills.
Mm-hmm.
In Europe, they're like, wow, look at that voice. They're not nervous. They're not scared. They're like, they're embracing it. And it's because they grew up with it. They listen to it. Like you said, they mimic it. They watch it. They study it.
Right.
We don't respect our own here, you know.
Oh, right. That's right.
We don't respect it. It's just sad. And I'm not going to say every record that, you know, because I've watched, like, the NSYNC explosion, and that was a deliberate action by Jive Records to cross them over. They took that Gone record to WGCI. They broke it overnight, like in a quiet storm. I love Gone. But they broke it on WGCI, B103. They broke it on the urban platform, and people went nuts because Justin, you can't get around his voice. Like, that boy got a voice. Like, you know, they got that little R&B soul, John B sounding voice. Right? So they did that on purpose. They broke them, and that was a segue to Justin going solo. So I'm not saying every record is, oh, you can take this record and let's say we took NSYNC's Gone record and gave it to Jagged Edge. It's not necessarily works like that, right? I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think certain groups, certain artists, deliver things better, you know. Like, I heard the demo of Diamonds, okay, from the lady that did it. Like, you can go out and hear the original song, the demo. It's out there floating around. That lady was blowing. Rihanna got that song, dumbed it down, but it was stylistic. Rihanna is a stylistic singer. She may not be blowing, but her tone and voice, she delivers. Well, I love her because, right, she's stylistic. So she took Diamonds and just bodied it, but if you listen to the original and the demo, this lady is over here blowing, you know. But so I'm not saying that, oh, give Selena Diamonds, she would have killed it. Not necessarily, because Rihanna had a different appeal to it. But some of these records, Adele and them be doing it, Sam Smith, I'd be like, whatever. You heard Luke James doing what Sam Smith did. I know you heard his version.
Yeah.
Now, come on. Who did it better?
Let me tell you something. And this is me being honest, and sorry to the listeners who are Luke James fans. I'm not the biggest Luke James fan, but in that case, come on. That man is singing. That he's doing that good old down south Sunday dinner after church singing, praying grandma.
I love Luke James, so I'm biased. Like, I literally
know, but you're right. Like, with me, you know, I am, and I'm going to say it, I'm a Mary J. Blige. Like, Aretha, Mary, and Chaka, those are that's the trinity for me right there. And I know how people feel about Mary singing sometimes. So there's been a couple instances.
Mary a little suspect. Yeah, she's been on the ropes a little bit.
Right. And I understand that.
That's my girl.
Right, that's everybody, girl. You know, but as somebody, like, I've seen Mary, I can't even count the amount of times, like, I've seen.
No, me too. Yeah.
Mary. But I think there's something in certain artists, like, I've heard Mary do demos for songs that have blown up for other people. And I've been blown away, like, this should have been a Mary song, but I'm glad it's not a Mary song. Just like with Rihanna, like, I've heard Rihanna do things that I'm like, it fits, and I'm glad this is your song, because it would not have performed the same way if it was for anybody else. And right. with that, I'm going to ask you one last question, and I'm going to switch gears a little bit.
Well, let me throw something in about Luke James.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Why I love Luke James, besides the fact that he's very fine and gorgeous and can sing, but he is a young guy that was unapologetic, young millennial that came out singing, and they let him sing. And I love the fact that he's getting into acting and doing other things because he realizes that he's not one-dimensional. So I do like the fact that he was a millennial and they let him be him.
Him, right. Okay. So my last question, I'm going to switch gears before I pass it to Whitney. You're an angel mom. How has that, if at all, well, first I want you to explain what an angel mom is, and then I want you to answer, how has being an angel mom affected your career, if at all?
Well, I mean, now I can get real deep around here. That's what y'all trying to do. angel mom is a woman, because you can be an angel dad, too, but I'm an angel mom.
Right.
I had a stillbirth, so I was 7.5 months pregnant, and my daughter was stillborn. I had to go through 30 hours of labor, so her heart stopped, like, when I went to the ultrasound. Her heart stopped, so she passed away, and I had to deliver her. So that is an angel mom. So people that have miscarriages, stillbirths, late-term miscarriage, people that lose babies, SIDS, whatever, you know, however the baby passed away, we call ourselves angel moms. And it devastated me. Like, that literally took me out during a time where we were in the middle of that Selena Johnson Music Soul Child Reggae Soul album. I don't know if you remember that.
Right. Nine, yes, I do.
Yeah, the Nine album. So we were in the middle of that. That was a whole thing. And it affected me, actually, in a, looking back, it was something that probably had to happen to me because it slowed me down. And it made me realize that I had to put myself first as opposed to clients and everybody else and projects, because music and it was driving me real crazy through that whole process. But we're not going to go there. Let's see.
Yeah.
I will go there.
But we're going to call later.
When I tell you. Yeah, because that's a whole, but it's cool now. So it didn't, I think it affected me in a positive manner, because it was devastating, but it made me realize that, you know, you're not invincible, you're not perfect, you're not, loss can happen to you, you know, things don't always go as you plan, and now you got to slow down and take time for yourself. So, but yeah, you know, some people look at me and be like, you know, afterwards I lost a lot of weight. I changed and transformed my whole thinking and life. You know, I dropped 70 pounds. I changed my entire life, my platform, my business model, and I've actually made more money. And not everybody will go through something like that and come out better. You know what I'm saying? So people do look at me and be like, I don't even know how, because I have friends that are angel moms that have lost babies and they're still in deep depression. So, you know, you got to pray. I went through all the therapies. I did all the good therapies. I'm not against therapy at all. So it was something that affected me, and it was like the industry kept moving. Once you realize the industry kept moving, does anybody care about you and your little baby? You'd be like, oh. You know, I was in the hospital bed getting calls and texts about certain things, and I'd be like, really?
Wow.
Like, are you serious? I'm not going to say who, but men are very insensitive sometimes, but we're not going to go there.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm gonna pass it to Whitney and let her ask you a few questions.
Thank you. Just to kind of go or continue with where we're talking right now, I try to tell people a lot of times, like, it's really important that you do take time for yourself, even though, like, life keeps moving and all of that. But just looking at your resume and everything that you do, you seem extremely busy. You do a lot of different things. How do you approach handling so many different responsibilities and projects, and also make sure to still take care of yourself, make time for yourself and things like that? Like, how do you keep everything balanced, I guess?
That's very difficult. I have to learn how to, like, unplug, say no, turn things down. I don't work with every client or everybody that reaches out to me. I just hired a new assistant. I had an assistant for a long time, and then she got another position. She had to go do, you know, live her life.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't had an assistant for 2 years. So I just hired Jatan, my new assistant. So she's, like, in a probationary period. She's doing good. And I just hired her. So you need an assistant, and you need to work out. You need to, you know, meditate, pray. You need to intermittent fast. You need to go to yoga. You need to just sometimes unplug, not do anything. And I listen to music. I like to listen to music, see who's out. There's so much new music out. Like, I don't know who. Some of these, my students tell me about these artists. I'll be like, who is that? I don't be knowing half these people. So I try to stay up to date on that. I watch a lot of, you know, I'm trying to get into some of the TV shows just because I love the whole TV world now. And sometimes you got to unplug from TV because I really hate Trump really bad. So I try to do things that, you know, I'm very simple. So I'm single right now, so that's boring. But, you know, it is what it is.
Okay.
So that out there, in case any, you know, any suitors want to, you know, inbox me or something,
and
you know.
You might be surprised. Like, he might be out there listening right now. And then another thing, you mentioned that you're a professor, which I was really interested in that. And how did you get, I guess, to where you are? Because when I look at everything, like, I can see how some of these things go together, but, like, there's no possible way I could put, like, a label over you and say you are this or you are that, you just do this or that. Like, you have a lot of different things going on, and I see, like, I've been trying to figure out how to get myself kind of into one of those type groups, because I find, like, I get really bored if I do one thing too long, but then sometimes I put too much on my plate, and then it's overwhelming. So, like, right now, I guess, since school is out, or I'm guessing you haven't started back yet for the semester?
We started in September, but here's the thing.
Okay.
I have a very high work ethic, and I coach people all the time. We just live in a society that people are, and I enjoy what I do. So you got to be passionate, and it has to be your purpose. But I think we live in a society where most people are lazy and very average. So, and I'm not trying to be shady, but it is what
right.
it is. People don't want to work hard. You can work hard. You can have good time management and still invest in yourself. But people are just lazy. And I like many things, so I don't want to be boxed in. But I do know that I'm only great at two things, one or two things. Everything else I'm good at, and I can just make a check off of, and I can get back.
Mm.
So first master what you're great at, right? And it's not one thing. I don't believe that. It's usually one or two things you can kind of be of high excellence. And then fill around that. So I worked in corporate world, and I had education, right? I started teaching part-time in 2001. So I've been a professor and teaching at the college level for 17 years. And so I would do it off and on. And then I started working in the entertainment business, probably for, you know, since 2001. We went on the TP2 tour. I was her role manager, business manager, and then manager and agent, right? So I started to add skills and expertise over the last, 17 years? 20 years, actually. Adding little things. My corporate experience helped me maneuver in the entertainment world, right? I was a person that liked structure. I knew, I understood project management. I understood marketing, branding, and the business world. I constantly read. I'm a professor, so I got to read textbooks
right.
all the time.
And, right, makes sense.
You know, even and just because I'm, you know, I, you don't have to be a professor to go read and find books. But I constantly built up my skill set. So I would tell entrepreneurs, I tell them, become an expert in a couple of things. Become great, right? And then add different little components around that. But you have to work hard. You have to really put the work in. People are lazy. And people are like, how do you do all this stuff? Y'all lazy. You got enough time in the day. You sitting around lurking on Instagram and Twitter, and you ain't doing nothing. Don't get me started on that. I just said that about 5 times. Don't get me started on you guys are hitting on my topic.
Well, no, and that's the reason for that, though. So a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, it's stuff that I've talked to other people about, but it's also stuff that I'm going through right now. So, I mean, I'm asking a bunch of this for myself because I do find myself in a situation where I'm like, okay, I'm starting to stack up different projects, and that's great. I'm busy, but then I start to feel like, okay, I can't quite devote the right amount of time, I feel, to all of my projects right now, and I keep trying to play around with the structure of it and the time, but it just becomes challenging. And then, of course, once I get a couple of things, like, going real well, you know, life happens. There's a disruption, and it feels hard, like, getting back into the swing of things. And so that's why I keep harping on, like, I'm looking at everything that she's doing. I'm like, okay, she's doing a lot of the things that I hear people say you can do, but it's just like, how do you get there? And so everything you're saying is extremely valuable. So I'm glad, like, we're hitting on topics that are near and dear to your heart, because I'm sure it's helping all of us and many other listeners out there, too.
You know what? You got to figure out your lane, you know, and be tunnel vision, but be able to see through the tunnel. So people think tunnel vision means just worry about myself. That's true, but you got to be able to see through the tunnel. Stay in your lane, but your lane can be, there can be a few things in your lane. And just become an expert and slowly build expertise, but master things. Right? And become efficient and effective. And so all of the little skills that I've learned, like I can help somebody with their brand easily because I've done it. And you keep building and adding to your resume. I can tell a person how to start a business because I've done it. I can tell a person how to make 6 figures because I've done it and I do it. You know, I can tell a person how to build certain amount of income streams because I have 12. You know, I can tell a person how to put out a book because I've done it and I've helped other people put their books out. And I've done social media campaigns, so I know how to put together a label. Like, we literally started our own label, and we had to go through that process. So everything you do should prepare you to your ultimate vision. And I just think people don't work smart. They don't work hard, and they bullshit themselves. They literally think they're – people are on a wheel. They literally think they got it going on, and they ain't doing nothing. And, like, you got to just look at your week and be like, okay, how am I spending my time? Look at your day. How am I spending my time? You should be productive in the morning, get up, have a routine, have a ritual. And especially in the entertainment industry, you got to get up early, right, because you got people on the East Coast and West Coast. And now I'm not saying work all day, but if you get up early enough, work out, you know, get a lot of stuff done by 10, 11, 12, chill, and maybe, you know, when I get off the phone with you guys, I'm probably going to make calls and do some more things because I go out of town. But it's just about knowing your vision, having a plan, and then execution. Most people fail at the execution.
Oh, my God. True. You've hit on so many great things and so many plethora of gems, and I just want to say you're hilarious. and you get
just,
so much.
Thank you so much. You know, I can go forever, you know. But
right.
I can't because I think I've talked too much.
No, no, you're fine. And I will thank you for coming on. And we do this thing with our guests. We play this game we call What's Wrong With You? And it's pretty much the game is either or. It's not about vocal comparisons. We're just going to, I'm just going to put a list of singers and groups out there, and you just pick which one. And I make up the rules as I go. So I'm just going to start it off. Marvin Gaye or Teddy Pendergrass?
Marvin Gaye.
There you go. You're talking right. Oh, OJs or The Whispers?
OJs.
Prince or Rick James?
Prince. Oh, my God. This is not even fair.
Those are all bonus. Either way, you could have win. But this one's a little intense. I'm going to get further down. Okay, Off the Wall or Thriller?
Ooh. Okay, I see what you're doing. I got to go Thriller.
Thriller? Are you sure?
Yeah. That's what she said. This game is rigged.
She's sure.
I'm going to go with Thriller. I'm going to go with Thriller because...
So I have to go song for you to pick the right one, or are you just sticking with Thriller?
This game is rigged.
Why are you just Thriller? That man was sitting on...
Listen, when you talk about... Listen, we spent a whole 30 minutes talking about Caucasian... songs and people feeling they Caucasian of Thriller. And so the blackest album Michael Jackson has made was Off the Wall. So you picking the Caucasian
was a classic.
Of MJ versus the blackest song.
No, you hating on that man. You hating on that man. That's when he transitioned to his Jerry curl. Don't do that. That was the 80s.
So you're picking. Okay? I'm just trying to give you a chance to not get a What's Wrong With You. That's all I'm doing. I'm trying to be fair.
The game is rigged.
Okay, so you get What's Wrong With You on that one.
How can... No.
So you're supposed to say Off the Wall.
Thriller is a classic. How
Off the Wall is
a
classic. He had Boris Johnson playing bass. If it wasn't for the black, Quincy Jones produced both of those records, but he had the blackest musicians on there, Louis Johnson. He had, Rob Temperton wrote on there that played for Heat Wave. You know, all the black instrumentation you needed was on Off the Wall.
That's fine. We got power to the people, however. Human Nature, Billie Jean, Pretty Young Thing, if I not recall, Lady of My Life is on there, and you got the doggone Wannabe Sad and stuff, like that was an album full of singles. I don't understand how this is even
we talk about a compilation of like great, like, so you picking more songs, okay, that's fair, you gave a fair reasoning, because it is about music catalog, how many times do you... So you play more Thriller songs than Off the Wall songs, is your judgment?
Yeah. Now, Off the Wall is a nice little album cover. I mean, but come on.
Okay, you play it to the rules. Okay, so I won't give you a What's Wrong With You on that one. This next one,
thank you very
much. I usually say Patty versus Aretha, but I already feel like you're going to say Aretha, so you can get a bonus for that. You said Aretha. Aretha's your pick. That one's going to be my next one.
Yeah, I got to go with Aretha. I love Patty, though.
Aretha, that's fine. Okay. We celebrating
her
today.
But I got to go with Aretha. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with you right now. Okay. Right. The next one. Babyface or Brian McKnight?
Brian McKnight, so cold. That ain't even a category. Babyface is suspect on singing. So.
Wait. No, we're talking about replay value of catalog. So you're not playing Karen White. You're not playing TLC. You're not playing... After 7, you're not playing no.
Are you going to go into Babyface?
The game is rigged.
It's about replay value of playlists. How many songs playlists do you have more? Babyface or Brian McKnight?
Babyface actual albums or Brian McKnight? Because Babyface.
Well, L.A. Reid. I'm talking about added production with L.A. Reid as well. Like I said, Karen White, the After 7.
But that ain't Babyface's album. What we measuring here, boo? What we measuring?
All of it. That's all a part of it. His solo album, the production with L.A. Reid as well. I'm adding all catalog. So it's all catalog versus...
Okay, I gotta go with Babyface. But Brian McKnight
has
a pen game. I don't know if people know this, but Brian McKnight is right.
That's why I compare both of those, because they're... musicianship wise, they were both on the same level. That's why I picked.
Now I gotta go with Babyface. But we're talking about vocal ability and singing. We gotta.
No. That's why I say it's not about vocal comparisons, because that's what people go to. But the conclusion of the game is there's nothing wrong with Dr. Celicia Thompson. Give it up. Will, you got the clap.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Glad I didn't get kicked
out. You do so many great things. You're an angel mom, you're an author, professor, entrepreneur, entertainment manager, brand strategist, an agent, and you also do consulting, strategizing, and master. Tell them about the different classes that you master classes you do personally. To where people, if they wanted to take your classes, where could they sign up at?
I have stopped doing them for a while because I have so many coaching clients. So many people have come to me to help them with media, TV, and their business. So I haven't done master classes in a while, but. If you do want to work with me, you can go to my website or you can email me through my website. And I work with people 6 months or longer. And, of course, it's not free. And you have to pay.
Right.
And I help, you know, I'm all about helping you transform. So I think that's what most people need is transformation. They want to go from one place to the next. And, you know, that's what I'm about right now, helping people realize and live their dreams.
Yes, thank you so much for coming
but
on.
But thank you for having me. I had a great time.
No problem.
I talked a lot, but you hit on all my topics.
You're fine. You're hilarious, and you just gave a fountain of gems, and I was refreshed by your knowledge and everything that you were talking about. You can get her book. It's called Rhythm Without Blues, the Dichotomy of Music Genre, if you can get on Amazon for $9.99. And what other products can we be looking out for you?
Just go to my website, check out Selena on Black Music Honors. I don't know when it's going to air. And all my clients, just go to my website and you'll see what I'm doing, drcelicia.com. And that's it. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes, and... we got to go to break real quick, and we will be back. We'll be talking about Aretha Franklin to the end of the show. If Will's ready, we're going to break with Aretha hit. Thank you so much, Dr. Thompson.
Bye. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Review the story of two sisters. Oh, Mary and Martha. They had a brother. Named Lazarus. One day while Jesus was away. Thank you. got up walking like a natural man. Oh, yes, he did. Oh, yes, he did. Jesus said, na, 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 na,
and we are back. This is the Soul Savage Show on Studio W The Buzz with the QLN, EB, and Whitney.
I was doing a church class in there. One of my favorites from that gospel hour, Amazing Grace. Oh, my God, that was ridiculously good. If you're tuning in late, we just interviewed the amazing Dr. Felicia Thompson. Oh, my goodness. She is not just a fountain of wisdom, but she's hysterical. I had to mute myself multiple times because she was just incredible. That was a great interview. We talked about, if you missed it, we talked about the music industry in terms of why soul music isn't selling and different perspectives. I think we were all sort of saying the same thing, but it was an amazing conversation, and also talking about the many things that she does in the industry. She's just you know, wearing so many hats. I just thought it was dope. But yeah, it's only 20 minutes left. We just gonna talk about Aretha for the whole show. I didn't know if Will was ready. Did you need more time for the next song?
I'm good right now. If you want back to back, I can bring it to you.
Yeah, this is the gospel. I just felt like listening to some gospel because it's just, you know, my spirit, you know, I gotta, you know, lift my spirits up. So it's gospel keynote. Show me.
Okay. Hold, best bear with me one second. Yep. Coming up, the gospel keynotes. All right, and that song is "Show Me the Way."
Yes.
All right, just bear with me.
We'll be
here.
Back, y'all.
All right.
We'll be back, talking about the Queen.
The Queen, absolutely. We've been playing music, her music, all day today. So, if you've been listening to the Buzz, you had an absolute treat today, and I'm sure that it's going to go on tonight. But in the meantime, let's do this. This is the gospel keynotes, folks. All right, show me the way.
Yeah, yeah. That's
it right there. That's not play that night. Oh, Lord, show me the way. Oh, Master, I'm down here, and I need your power, for I know
Lord, I said, oh Lord, Lord, I'm your child.
Soul Savage Show.
We are back. Soul Savage Radio. We are back. Show me the way. Oh, man. That song, we used to go in on that in church, but we are back. We just got to spend the last 15 minutes talking about Aretha. I really want to ask Will first, you know, since he was, you know, alive during that era when in her prime, what was the energy like back then when Aretha first came out?
Oh man, you know, with all of her songs, you know, as a matter of fact, I think the one that hits me the most was, Respect, but look at all of the songs, you know, that she's done. Spanish Harlem, Something He Can Feel, Think, you know, Who's Zooming Who, Look Into Your Heart, Loving You Baby, Rock Steady, Freeway of Love, Eleanor Rigby, and Do Right, oh my goodness. Do Right Woman, Do Right Man. And you know what? I tell you what, that would bring everybody to the knees right there when, you hear that. But the energy was so alive. Anytime Aretha, Ain't No Way, Ain't Nobody Ever Loved You, Another Night, Baby I Love You, Call Me, Chain of Fools. I mean, we can go on and on. I mean, anytime this woman stepped up to the microphone, she had your undivided. The energy was electric. Absolutely. And you know, the thing about it is that, every show, it was no, just taking the show from her because everybody knew that she was the show. So, yep, electricity all through the place, you know. And I saw her many times at the Mosque Auditorium in Richmond, Virginia, and the acoustics there were just fantastic. And so, no, it's just alive, you know, just great, great, great. Great stuff. So like I said, we've been playing her stuff all day. We were playing it last night on the WB and Mighty OT Smooth Jazz and R&B show. We were playing it Tuesday night. So, and I'm sure this will continue. So we're going to keep her music alive. And the ladies tomorrow night, they will be playing Aretha on their show as well.
EB, you go ahead. What's your thoughts?
Oh man. I cried so many tears today. If anybody who's listening knows me and you know how I feel about music, Aretha is music. She is soul. She is the single most important musical entity worldwide. Aretha is black music. Black music is American music, and American music has influenced all music. I made a post today. I'm not going to go into detail about it, but just on her importance and her legacy. And even here, I don't hate to speak for you, Q-Land, but this is the Soul Savage Show. There would be no soul without Aretha. Like, I say it all the time, no matter who you like, no matter who you listen to, everybody from the Beatles down to Sierra, back up to to maybe like an Elvis Presley and back down to like a Keisha Cole, everybody has been influenced by Aretha. Like music, in particular the music industry, changed because of Aretha. Aretha wasn't the first to bring gospel to R&B, but she made it popular and she made it profitable. And I think we have to respect her legacy. We have to carry it on because I'm scared, y'all. Like soul music, we like our greats, they're leaving, but we're not getting the talent that replaces them, not in the same way. So that's, those are my thoughts on Aretha.
Oh man, Whitney, you got anything? You go ahead.
Yeah, no, when I heard, I felt so bad. I immediately thought of Evie and I was like, man, I hope he all right. But I think there's like beauty in the legacy that she leaves behind. And like I don't know what music, or even just like sensuality for women in music looks like without someone like Aretha coming through, because the way that she, the lyrics to the songs, like when you listen to them, like certain things that she talked about, like love and like men and things like that, I don't know of another singer that I remember hearing growing up, like as a little kid, like hearing tracks like that. I don't remember hearing them from anyone else. Like no one else had that type of presence. And she's just extremely talented. Like you can't, it's hard to kind of put into words. It's like a feeling that you get when you hear her music. Like it takes you somewhere. And even the stuff that was just playing, it made me think of Jehovah, you know, and I thought about my mom growing up in church and all of that, you know, like that's how I know Q-Lynn. Like, so this, and now I'm on this show, you know, like all about, like look at Aretha was out here helping create shows and she didn't even know it. Like, cause yeah, you can't talk about soul music without her. So the world like lost someone great, but the wonderful thing is in this age of internet goodness, we can still pull up the music, we can still hear it, and there's a lot of ways to ensure like that music never dies. Like as long as there's people around to appreciate people like her, it won't die. We can keep sharing, putting it out there, bringing it up, and that's the greatness of shows like this. And as well as people like EB, I'm constantly learning something off of EB's Twitter feed about music, and it's because he's dedicated and he's passionate and he puts that information out there. So though we will miss her physical presence here, like what she left behind for us to treasure it's still a big deal.
Absolutely. And the reason why I did that, the What's Wrong With You game, it was just to, you know, make it fun, you know, with our legends, but then just always,
right,
you know, with the guests that come on, I want them to expound why they like, because it's always, you know, reasons. And I just put together a tribute audio of it all. It's like 15 minutes long, 14 minutes long or something like that. And I think Cookie Turner, singer that was on, and then also Lee, like they were the ones that expounded the most. And as well as I think I have Royale Watkins, comedian, expounding on why. And then, you know, I have some, you know, patty picks in there, sprinkled in there as well. They're giving their, you know, reasons why. But the whole purpose of the game was to say, to expound on why they love these artists. Not necessarily comparing, but it's just like, who do you listen to more? And honestly, it was mostly Patty for me, but Aretha, I was like, it would be unfair to say vocal comparison, because she blows everybody out. So anybody that ever tried to bring in vocal, I'm like, nah, because that's cheating, because she, vocal-wise, like, when you talk about mixing genres together, like, you know, she, you know, she sung opera, you know, she goes from country. Any song, she could turn into a country, it could turn into a country song. Any song could be turned into a blues song. Any song could be turned into a gospel song in terms of her R&B. And if you check the history, I don't know if people know, Dinah Washington was a huge star in the 50s. And she did that. She did everything. She had number one pop records. She had gospel records, blues records, and some categorized as dirty blues, and then also gospel as well, and jazz. And she mixed all, her voice was so clear and concise and beautiful. And then it got to the point, she was, you know, successful for like 7 years, charted number one hits. She had over 20 to 27 hits on Billboard. But at the time period, R&B music wasn't categorized. It was called the black music, they categorized it as R&B music at the time was blues music. And then it kind of got to the point in early 60s to where they were saying gospel mixed with blues was R&B. And then that's when Aretha got her record deal, Columbia Records. And so once, I think Dinah Washington died like 63, 64. And around that, I think any of that time period, Aretha came on board and they were trying to sort of pretty much basically was want to turn Aretha into Dinah Washington. But the beautiful thing about Aretha was that she was played the piano. She played by ear. And she had an admiration for Dinah Washington as well. I think I just read somewhere to where she only met her a couple of times, but she always spoke highly of her, but that was always her influence that she also made. And then she just did this thing to where she always covered everybody's song. Like, a lot of people don't know that Otis Redding written that song, Respect. And she would just do stuff like that to where, you know, she would take, you know, songs she would cover and it would be originally her, like she made it her own sound. And so I think Dinah Washington, once she passed, I think that was, if it wasn't for Dinah Washington, it would be Aretha Franklin. And if it wasn't for Aretha Franklin, it wouldn't be a Mary J. Blige. It wouldn't be, you know, Faith Evans. All those great singers that y'all love, Fantasia, you know, Chaka Khan, all those voices. If it wasn't for that, her love of history and her love of her influences, then you wouldn't have the current ones we have now. And she pretty much was sort of the trilogy of going into the 50s where they categorized it as black music and they didn't really have a word for it. And then she sort of, that's when R&B was coined, when she became, you know, a superstar. And so she's the sort of the mecca of it all with R&B music. And when you look at the history, you look at that and you have to see that she started so young. And so technically you could say she passed away at like 96 or close to 100, because you have to have a certain level of maturity to go through all that. Her father, Reverend Franklin, you know, famous pastor, you know, she's part of American history in terms of civil rights history, you know, right there in the mix of all of that. Martin Luther King, the right hand to Martin Luther King, you know, you hear all different stories of the black excellence and everything that she persevered, everything that she did during that time period. And then when you look at Martin Luther King singing at Martin Luther King's funeral to the first black president's inauguration, you look at that history, she's sort of that time stamp of music history. All is, when you look at the compass of everything she's done. So I would say she's just one of the best. Like, when you think of soul singers, you have to say Aretha Franklin. I don't think it goes without saying. It's like, that's one of those things. And I don't look at it as a negative. I think it is a positive, because she's in a better place. She's probably feeling way better. You know, she probably, you know, had a lot of pain. You know, I ain't gonna tell her how long. I think they said she's been, you know, sick since like 2010. So she's been, you know, battling all the things she's going through. So I always look at it in a positive way. But yeah, Will, did you get that audio I sent you? I was gonna send you the tribute of, we got the What's Wrong With You game. I have all the Patty versus Aretha. I got some of it. I was gonna leave out the one where Tia, your best friend EB, that picked Patty. I left all that out because I didn't want
right.
to. I didn't want to devastate you anymore, so I left those last two. I could have put Daru in there, but I was running late on time, so I didn't get to add that. But if Will check his thing, I think I sent it to him. But if not, we'll save it for some other time. My savvy heathen talk. We just gonna end it. Like that, we only got 2 minutes left.
Oh, right. Hey, I have it pulled up, Q-Land. And you know,
okay, Patty versus Aretha.
Okay.
Q-Land, there's an argument to be made there. There is an argument to be made there.
Q-Land, that was the wrong clip you sent me. Okay. Yep. You have Patty versus. Yep, that was the wrong one. So, yep. It was the wrong one.
I don't think you're looking right.
I'm looking at Dropbox that you sent. Right here. This is what you sent.
Yeah,
because everybody was. You know what I mean? If
people go back and listen to
Aretha. Yep, that was an old clip that you sent of another show, Q-Lan. That was an accident, but that's okay. But, you know, in closing, you know... Yep.
Right.
Yep. Okay. No problem. But you know,
we'll
do it. Hey, we're going to keep her music alive. But you know, in 2005, I don't know what you mentioned in that, but she got the, Medal of Freedom, Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2005. And she sang among many, many dignitaries around the world and was like, I would classify her as the, queen of dignitaries because people bowed down to her all over the world. They were in awe when they saw her. You know, so what we're going to do, I'll tell you what, I will play in closing, because we're getting ready to start the Mellow Mood Show. I'm going to, in closing, what I'm going to do, I'm going to play, those last two songs out, going back, Until You Come Back to Me, You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. So we'll get into it. And folks, this has been.
Play those, because I wanted to cry. Those are the ones I don't necessarily listen to. That's another reason why I listen to Aretha, because her songs make me really cry. And it's like a deep spiritual depth with her voice, and it's like pulls all kind of emotion out. So I picked those are one of my two favorite songs, but I'm not gonna listen. That's why I picked them for the end of the show.
Okay.
So I would sit here and cry like a Caucasian person, like a Hebrew slave, just for the end of the show.
Okay,
folks. Well. Radio. We air every Thursday, 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. My cabin, he's talking. Rest on to the queen. You're a musician. She was a musician's musician, singer. She left the blueprint, you know, her stamp on musical history is there, and that's my
All right. Well, we're going to close it out. Until You Come Back to Me.
With the Undisputed. Tears welling in my spirit right now. I'm about to cut it off right now.
Okay. The Undisputed Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin.
Positive, amazing. Yeah.